Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're taking a deep dive into something pretty radical in the world of statistics.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. A whole new way of thinking about the method of moments. We're looking at a paper called, get this, A Radically Different Method of Moments.
Catchy title.
Right. It's by William A. Gardner. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the classic method of moments, you know, estimating parameters in our models.
Of course.
But this new method, well, it really shakes things up.
How so?
Well, for one, it uses Bayesian inference.
Interesting.
And there's this concept of optimally weighted sample moments. Plus, get this, it can actually handle situations where the data is changing over time.
Hmm. That's something the classic method really struggles with.
Exactly. Okay. It's a big challenge. So yeah, get ready because we're about to go deep.
I'm excited to dive in. You know, it's fascinating to think about how the traditional method of moments, we often just call it MOM, has been a cornerstone of statistics for over a century. It's like this reliable tool that we've depended on for ages.
It's a classic for a reason.
Exactly. But just like any tool, you know, there's always room for improvement. In this paper, it's like someone took that old, trusty MOM and gave it a serious upgrade.
A 21st century makeover.
Haha, exactly.
Okay, so before we get into all the radical new stuff, how about a quick recap of the classic MOM, just to make sure we're all on the same page?
Sounds good to me. Imagine you have some data. Let's say it's stock prices for a popular tech company over the past year.
All right, I'm picturing the graph.
And you have a model, you know, some mathematical framework that tries to describe how those stock prices behave over time.
Okay, so we've got the data and the model.
Right. Now, this model has some unknown parameters, things like the average growth rate or maybe the volatility of the stock.
And that's where MOM comes in, right?
Yeah.
To help us figure out those unknown parameters.
Precisely. It works by comparing two sets of moments.
Okay, I'm listening. Two sets of moments.
First, you have sample moments, which we calculate directly from the data. These are basically statistical summaries of the data you have.
Got it. So just descriptive stats.
Yeah, you can think of it like that. And then we have theoretical moments.
Right. What are those?
Those are derived from the model. And they're expressed in terms of those unknown parameters we're trying to find.
So we're trying to match these two sets of moments, the sample moments with the theoretical ones.
Exactly. We set the sample moments equal to the theoretical moments. And then what do? We solve for those unknown parameters.
Uh-huh. Like solving a puzzle.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Often, this involves solving nonlinear equations. And those can get pretty tricky, mathematically speaking.
Right. Nonlinear equations, not always the easiest to deal with.
Yeah, that can be a real headache sometimes. And that's one of the limitations of the classic MOM. It can get bogged down in those messy equations.
So this new, radically different method, does it bypass those nonlinear equations?
It does. And that's one of the brilliant things about it. Instead of just matching those moments, this method goes further. It estimates the entire probability distribution of the unknown parameters given the data.
Wow, hold on. So instead of just getting one best guess for each parameter, we get a whole range of possible values with their probabilities.
You got it. It gives you much richer understanding of the problem.
I can see how that would be a lot more informative than just a single point estimate.
Exactly. And here's the best part. This new method, it always involves solving linear equations.
Really? No matter how complicated the relationship between those moments and the parameters get.
No matter how complex, always linear equations.
Wow. Okay, that sounds almost too good to be true. How do they manage to do that? How do they get around those nonlinear headaches?
It's all because of a clever trick they use. It's called a structural constraint. Essentially, they constrain the way we estimate that probability distribution.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What kind of constraint are we talking about?
They force us to use a specific type of function. It's a linear combination of some user-specified nonlinear transformations of the data.
Nonlinear transformations of the data.
Hmm.
That sounds a bit abstract. Can you break it down a bit for me?
Sure. Think of it like building with Lego blocks. You have different types of bricks, right? Some are long, some are short, some have different shapes. These are like your nonlinear transformations. You might square the data, take its logarithm, use all sorts of mathematical functions.
Okay, so we're transforming the data in different ways, creating different building blocks, so to speak.
Exactly. Then we combine these building blocks in a very specific way, linearly. That's our structural constraint. It's as if we're saying, okay, we can only use these Lego bricks to build our estimator, and we can only connect them in a straight line.
So we're kind of limiting ourselves, but in a strategic way.
Exactly. Now, it might seem limiting at first glance, but it's actually the key to making this whole thing solvable. It forces the solution to be in a form that we can handle mathematically.
And that's what leads to those nice linear equations you mentioned.
Precisely.
Okay, I'm starting to see the elegance here. But how do we know we're choosing the best combination of those building blocks, those nonlinear transformations?
That's where another key concept comes in. Minimizing the mean squared error, or MSE.
Ah, MSE, a classic measure of how well our estimates perform.
Exactly. We want to find the estimator that gets us as close as possible to the true probability distribution, on average. It's about minimizing those errors.
Okay, so it's like finding the Lego structure that best represents the shape we're trying to build, minimizing the gaps and mismatches.
That's a great analogy. And, you know, the paper actually highlights something really clever about this new MOM. It manages to eliminate the unknown probability distribution itself from those design equations.
Wait, so we don't even need to know the exact thing we're trying to estimate to design the estimator. That sounds a bit like magic.
It does, doesn't it? It's all thanks to equation 13. It might look intimidating at first, but what it boils down to is this. We can design our estimator using only two things.
Okay, I'm all ears. What are those two things?
First, the prior probability distribution, which we can often just assume is uniform if we don't know any better.
That makes sense. And the second thing?
The conditional moments of the data.
Hold on. Conditional moments. Could you unpack that term for me?
Sure. Imagine for a moment that you actually knew the true values of those unknown parameters we're after. Then, based on your model, you could calculate what you'd expect the data to look like on average. Those are your conditional moments. They tell you what to expect from the data, given specific values for those parameters.
So we're using what we know about the model and the data to design this estimator without needing to know the true probability distribution directly.
Exactly. It's like having a blueprint to build a house without needing to see the finished product beforehand.
I like that analogy. Very clever.
And the beauty of it all is that this approach, it always leads to those nice linear design equations, like equation 15 in the paper.
So we've got those linear design equations. What do the solutions actually look like? What do we get when we solve them?
Well, the solutions are surprisingly elegant. Let's look at a simple example. A linear estimator, which is described in equations 22 through 25. The solution involves three main steps.
Okay, I'm following along. Three steps.
First, we center the data. We just subtract the average value.
Okay, so remove any constant offset.
Right. Then we decorrelate the data. It's kind of like ensuring each data point is independent of the others.
I see. Removing any dependencies between the data points.
Exactly. And finally, we empirically correlate the data with its conditional mean. We figure out how much each data point is contributing to those expected average values we talked about earlier.
So we're basically massaging the data in specific ways to get the information we need?
Precisely.
And you mentioned earlier that this solution, in some cases, it resembles something called a Wiener filter.
Yes. It's fascinating. The Wiener filter is a classic tool in signal processing. We use it to try to recover a signal that's been corrupted by noise.
Okay, so we have some noisy data, and we want to clean it up.
Right. And what's remarkable is that when our data happens to be a signal with some additive noise, the solution we get from this new MOM, it actually looks a lot like a Wiener filter.
Wow, so we're seeing unexpected connections between different fields.
Exactly. It speaks to the power of this framework to reveal underlying connections and relationships. And remember, we've just scratched the surface here, talking about linear estimators. The paper also hints at the possibility of using higher order polynomial estimators, which can capture even more complex relationships in the data.
Okay, so things are about to get even more interesting. And you mentioned tensors earlier. What role do they play in all this?
Well, tensors, you can think of them as mathematical superheroes. They're like generalized matrices that can handle data with multiple dimensions and complex interdependencies.
So they're like superpower tools for building even more sophisticated estimators.
Precisely. And while the math can get a bit more involved when we bring tensors into the picture, the underlying concept remains the same. We're still looking for the best linear combination of building blocks, just with more powerful tools at our disposal.
Sounds exciting.
It is. You know, one thing that really struck me about this paper.
What's that?
Is how it kind of changes our whole perspective.
In what way?
Like we're not just searching for a single right answer anymore.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. We're kind of embracing the uncertainty and trying to capture a whole spectrum of possibilities.
So instead of looking for one specific point.
Right.
It's more like we're trying to illuminate a whole area.
Exactly. It's like switching from a laser pointer to a floodlight.
Ah, I get it.
We're getting a broader view.
Yeah.
A more complete picture of the problem.
But doesn't that make things more complex?
It does, but in a good way.
Okay. How
so? By acknowledging that uncertainty mm-hmm. that's inherent in any estimation,
right.
we can actually make smarter decisions.
I see.
Think about it. It's like the difference between knowing the average temperature for a day mm-hmm. and having a full forecast.
Oh.
With highs and lows and chances of rain.
So you're saying having more information
right.
can actually help us make better decisions.
Exactly. Especially when those decisions involve risk.
Right, where the stakes are higher.
Which could have big consequences.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's a key advantage of this new method.
Okay.
It doesn't just give us one best guess. Mm. It gives us that whole probability distribution.
Right.
Of the parameters.
So we can quantify that uncertainty.
Exactly.
And then use that to make more robust decisions.
Precisely. So instead of just the most likely value,
yeah.
we get a sense of how confident we are in that estimate.
That is powerful.
It is.
Especially when you're dealing with noisy data or data that's incomplete.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or when you have these really complex systems that are always changing.
You got it.
It's like thinking back to that Lego analogy.
Okay.
It's not just about building one fixed structure anymore.
Right.
It's more about creating a model that can adapt
mm-hmm.
as new information comes in.
Exactly.
To change with the conditions.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So this new method of moments, or SCBM.
Right.
It sounds like it's a real game changer.
It is. It is. It's pretty amazing.
And the paper does a good job.
It does.
Of outlining all the advantages over the classic method.
It does.
In fact, there's a table. Table one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That lays it all out really clearly.
It's a great summary.
So besides this whole probability distribution thing
mm-hmm.
and the ability to handle those changing parameters,
right.
what else stands out to you?
Well, one thing that I find really interesting
yeah.
is this concept of optimally weighted sample moments.
Okay. Remind me, what are sample moments again?
Oh, they're basically just statistical summaries of the data.
Okay.
Like the average, the variance,
yeah.
the skewness,
right. yeah.
different ways to capture
yeah.
the main characteristics of the data.
Okay. So this new method,
yeah.
it doesn't just use those raw summaries. It weights them in some special way.
That's exactly it.
Interesting.
It uses something called optimally weighted sample moments.
And what does that do?
Well, it extracts more information from the data,
mm-hmm.
and that leads to more accurate estimations.
So it's like taking those raw ingredients
mm-hmm.
and using a special recipe.
I like that.
To combine them and get more refined result.
That's a great analogy, and that's one of the key things that sets this new method apart.
Okay.
That focus on optimizing the use of information.
Makes sense.
Squeezing out every last bit of insight.
Yeah, very cool.
You know, and another advantage
mm-hmm.
listed in table one
yeah.
is the ability to incorporate prior information.
Oh, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So prior information is any knowledge we already have
mm-hmm.
about the problem
okay.
before we even look at the data.
I see.
It could be from previous studies, expert mm-hmm. opinions, mm-hmm. or even just common sense.
So it's like incorporating what we already know
exactly.
into the analysis even before we look at the data.
And the classic method of moments,
yeah.
it doesn't have a way to do that.
Oh, okay.
But this new method does.
So we can take those insights, those intuitions we have,
right.
and actually build them into the model.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that can be incredibly helpful.
I bet. Especially if you don't have a ton of data.
Yeah.
Or when you're dealing with these really complicated systems.
Absolutely. It's like having a head start
mm-hmm.
in a race.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's about using all the information we have.
Right. Not just ignoring something because it didn't come from the data set.
Exactly. That flexibility
yeah.
to use prior information
mm-hmm.
is a big advantage of this new method.
It makes it much more powerful and versatile.
Precisely.
I'm really starting to see how this has implications for so many different fields.
It does. It does.
Earlier, you mentioned something about applications in digital communication.
Oh, yeah. One of the cool examples in the paper
yeah.
is using this method to design receivers.
Okay.
For those digitally modulated signals.
So like trying to decode a message.
Yeah. Imagine you're trying to receive a message
mm.
and it's been sent over a noisy channel.
Okay.
Your receiver's job
yeah.
is to figure out what that original message was.
Right. Despite all that interference.
It's like trying to have a conversation.
Okay.
In a really loud room.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You have to filter out all the noise to hear what someone is saying.
That's a great analogy.
So you're saying this method can help us do that with signals?
It can. What's fascinating is that when we apply this new method of moments to this kind of problem, the receiver structures we come up with, they actually look a lot like...
Like what?
Well-known things in signal processing.
Oh, okay.
Like matched filters and Wiener filters.
Oh, sounds familiar.
Yeah, remember we talked about Wiener filters before.
Right. It's amazing how all these ideas are connected.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It shows how this method can bring together different areas of knowledge and provide us with this more general framework for understanding these really complex systems.
It's like we're discovering a hidden language that connects all these different fields.
Exactly. And that's powerful because we can then take knowledge and insights from one field and apply it to problems in another field.
I love that. It's like cross-pollination for ideas.
It is. And it can lead to some amazing breakthroughs.
So it seems like this new method of moments, this SCDM framework, wasn't specifically designed for communications.
Right.
But it just so happens that it has some pretty amazing applications in that area.
It does.
That's so cool.
And the paper goes on to discuss other applications, too.
Oh, like what?
Like in optical communications.
Okay.
Using these things called marked and filtered Poisson processes.
All right. Now, that's getting a bit technical for me.
Yeah, it is.
But the main takeaway is that this new method, it's flexible enough.
It is.
To handle all these different types of data and models.
Exactly. It's incredibly versatile.
It's like having a Swiss Army knife for statistical analysis.
Uh-huh. I like that.
You can use it for so many different things. And what's really impressive...
What is it?
...is that it doesn't have to rely on those simplifying assumptions.
Like what?
Like additive Gaussian noise, which is a big one in traditional signal processing.
Right.
So this means it's a more robust approach.
Yes.
And it can deal with the messiness of real-world data...
Precisely.
Which is so important.
It is.
Because the real world is rarely neat and tidy.
Exactly. It's a much more realistic approach.
And that's what makes it so exciting. It has the potential to push those boundaries in fields like communications.
Absolutely.
Where that signal processing is so critical.
It is.
Okay, so we've seen how this new method of moments can be applied to problems in digital communications. But are there any other areas where it's proving to be useful?
Oh, yeah, there are a bunch. The paper touches on some really interesting applications.
Oh, cool. Like what?
In image processing.
Okay.
Where it can be used to enhance images and extract features.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Any other area?
There's even in finance, where it can model complex financial instruments and help make better investment decisions.
So this method is really showing its versatility.
It is.
It's not just limited to one specific field.
Exactly. It's applicable across many different domains.
And as more people start to use it.
Yeah.
I can only imagine we'll see even more creative and impactful applications.
Absolutely. It's like opening up a whole new world of possibilities.
It is. And what I really appreciate about this new method...
What's that?
...is that it's not a black box.
Right.
We can actually understand how it works, the mechanics of it.
You got it.
The paper provides a lot of insight into the properties of this SCBM posterior PDF estimator. Okay, for those of us who are not mathematicians...
Yeah.
Can you break that down a bit? What is this posterior PDF estimator?
Okay, well, remember how we talked about estimating that whole probability distribution of the parameters?
Right.
Well, this posterior PDF estimator, it's the mathematical object that represents that distribution.
Okay.
It's essentially a function that tells us the probability of each possible parameter value given the data that we've observed.
So it's like a map of the probabilities showing us the peaks and valleys of likelihood for different values.
Exactly. And the paper goes into some of those mathematical properties of this estimator.
Okay. So what kind of properties are we talking about?
Well, one important property is that it mostly follows the traditional axioms of probability.
Which are?
Those are the fundamental rules that govern how probabilities work.
Got it.
Like the fact that probabilities have to be between 0 and 1.
Okay, so they can't be negative, they can't be greater than 1.
Right.
You have to add up to 1.
Exactly. Yeah. So it behaves like a proper probability distribution.
Okay.
For the most part.
For the most part.
Yeah. But there's one interesting quirk.
Oh, what's that?
It doesn't always satisfy the positivity axiom.
And that one is?
That axiom requires probabilities to be non-negative.
So you're saying there are situations where this method might assign a negative probability to a certain parameter value.
It's possible, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, how so?
It kind of reflects the fact that this method is pushing the boundaries of traditional probability theory.
So it's playing by slightly different rules.
Yeah, you could say that.
But still getting us some really valuable insights.
Exactly. And another cool property is that the estimator is specified in terms of the prior PDF and the conditional moments of the data.
So we can actually see how all the pieces fit together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a really transparent process.
And that gives us more confidence in the results.
It does.
Because we can actually see how it works.
Precisely.
You know, I really appreciate how the paper manages to be both rigorous with the math, but also really clear in the explanations.
It does a good job of that.
It's a great balance.
It is.
It's not always easy to achieve that.
No, it's not.
But that's one reason why I think this paper is so important. It bridges the gap between those hardcore mathematicians and the people who are actually out there using these tools to solve problems.
You got it.
And it just goes to show that even in a field like statistics, there's always room for new ideas.
Absolutely.
For fresh perspectives, for asking, what if we do things differently?
Exactly. Sometimes those radical ideas lead to the most profound insights.
It's really amazing how this method can handle those tricky situations, you know, where the parameters themselves are actually changing over time.
It is. It's impressive.
It's like trying to hit a moving target.
Right.
And this new method gives us the tools to do it.
Exactly. It's like the model itself is adapting, evolving along with the data.
And it's constantly updating.
Right.
Refining those estimates as new data comes in.
And that's so important in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, think about financial models.
Oh, absolutely.
The ones that try to predict stock prices, interest rates.
Right, those kinds of things.
The economic conditions are always changing.
Always in flux.
So a model that can handle that dynamic nature, that seems incredibly valuable.
It is. It's essential for those kinds of problems.
And it's not just finance, right?
No, not at all.
What about climate modeling?
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect example.
You're dealing with incredibly complex systems that are constantly in motion.
And interacting with each other.
Exactly.
It's a huge challenge.
So this new method could really help us.
I could.
Make those climate projections more accurate and more reliable.
Absolutely. The potential is huge.
It's exciting to think about all the possibilities.
It is. It is.
As more researchers and practitioners learn about this and start to explore its power.
Yeah, I think we're just scratching the surface.
It's like we've been given this new lens.
Right. A new way of seeing things.
And we're just starting to see all of the incredible things it can do.
And it's not just about theoretical beauty.
Okay.
This has practical implications. Oh, yeah. This can lead to more efficient algorithms, faster computations, and better solutions to real-world problems.
That's what it's all about, right? Speaking of real-world problems, the paper goes into detail.
It does.
About how this method of moments, specifically the SCBM framework, can be applied to decision-making problems.
Yeah, and not just any decisions.
Okay.
But optimal decisions.
So making the best choice.
Right. Based on a really solid understanding of the probabilities and uncertainties.
Okay, that makes sense.
Remember that example we talked about earlier? That digital communications receiver?
Yeah, trying to figure out which symbol was sent.
Right.
Okay.
So instead of just picking the most likely symbol, SCBM lets us estimate the probabilities of all the possible symbols.
So
it gives us a way to measure our confidence.
Right. Like how sure are we?
Exactly. How sure are we that we've picked the right one?
That's so important, especially in situations where being wrong has big consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
Think about medical diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
Misinterpreting a test result could lead to the wrong treatment.
Right. Huge implications.
Or self-driving cars.
Oh, of course.
Making the wrong decision could have devastating consequences.
Exactly.
So having that measure of confidence in those high-stakes situations, it's crucial.
It is. It's essential.
It's the difference between making a gut decision and a calculated one.
Right. Informed by the probabilities.
And what's amazing is that when we apply SCBM to these decision-making problems, we often end up with solutions that look a lot like,
you know,
those matched filters and Wiener filters.
It's incredible.
We keep coming back to those.
It's like a common thread.
It really highlights how connected all these different fields are.
Exactly. It's like we're finding this unifying framework for understanding all these complex systems.
And this new method of moments is a big part of that.
It is. It's helping us see the connections.
It's like a common language that we can use to talk about these different fields.
Exactly. And that's exciting because it means we can share ideas and insights across disciplines.
And that can lead to even more breakthroughs.
Absolutely.
This has been an incredible deep dive.
It has.
We've covered so much ground.
We have.
We started by revisiting the classic method of moments.
Right, the old familiar friend.
And then we ventured into this uncharted territory.
It's a radically different approach.
We've seen how it uses Bayesian inference.
Yes.
How it leverages structural constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And how it ultimately leads to better estimates.
More accurate, more robust.
And we've uncovered some pretty amazing things along the way.
Like equation 13.
Exactly. And those linear design equations.
Mm-hmm.
And we even got a glimpse of the world of tensors.
Which is a whole other deep dive waiting to happen.
Oh, absolutely. But the main goal here was to give you, our listeners, a better understanding of this groundbreaking research and its potential to really reshape
across so many fields
how we approach statistical analysis.
Yeah, the possibilities are really endless.
We've seen how it could be used for everything from estimating parameters to making decisions
to handling dynamic systems, even unifying different fields.
It's a powerful tool.
It is.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
mm-hmm.
we want to leave you with a question.
Okay, I like it.
What other applications might this new method unlock in the future?
What new doors might it open?
What new discoveries are waiting to be made?
The future is bright.
We encourage you to explore the paper, dig deeper into the world of tensors, and stay curious.
Because there's always more to learn.
More to uncover.
And more deep dives to come.
Thanks for joining us on this adventure.
It's been a pleasure.